This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, Matt Larkin here. The Hockey News Podcast is back. I've got Ryan Kennedy and Ken Campbell with me. And we're not quite in the dog days of summer yet, but we're sort of creeping toward that. The offseason has really died down. And to start off today, guys, I want to talk offer sheets. I can't believe I'm saying it, but here we are. One did happen, and a week has passed. So what I want to ask you guys is, after the Sebastian Aho supposed offer sheet, are we going to see another one, or was that a one-off?
I hazard to say no, because we thought that it wouldn't happen, and it did already once. So it almost feels like now the gate has been opened a crack. And I wonder if it's going to be somebody else that we did not expect, like a Kyle Connor in Winnipeg. Not yeah. Patrick Laine in Winnipeg, but Kyle Connor in Winnipeg. A team knowing that the Jets have to sign both of them. And the Jets do have a ton of cap space right now. But is it somebody unexpected as opposed to the usual suspect, Mitch Marner?
I'm going to say that The offer sheet, I think, has come back to being a tool that GMs can use and will use. And I think it'll be used in the future. I'm not sure it's going to happen again this summer. I think if it does happen with Mitch Marner, and I've actually written about this for our website, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to go beyond the summer, maybe into the season. And that way, because I think that's the only way you can put the Toronto Maple Leafs into a position where they might not be able to match. You know what I'm saying?
Right now,
like if the roster's set, or you know, and then they just don't have the room, and then you kind of go after them because now it's like money. Like no,
now money. Is there a deadline? I need to look this up. I don't remember.
You can sign a free agent to an offer sheet until December 31st, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. So
there you go.
I think if this thing goes with Marner, if this thing goes into training camp, goes into the season, a la William Nylander, I think that there's a chance that, you know, that then you put them into stress, because then the roster's set, then they've got to do all kinds of sort of gymnastics to make it fit if you make it a prohibitive offer cap in terms of cap, because the only way you're going to get them is on a cap crunch. You're not going to get them on money, because they'll just say, oh wow, all this upfront money, oh, that's cute, we're just going to go back to that money printing machine we have in the back of the Scotiabank Arena, and we'll print out a couple $100 million.
Yeah. Right. And do you guys believe the conspiracy theory about Lou Lamoriello revenge? That's being tabled a lot on Twitter, you know, that as revenge for stealing away John Tavares, he's going to go out of his way to offer sheet Mitch Marner. I think the fact that the Islanders were able to re-sign Anders Lee decreases the odds of that happening, because it took up a good chunk of cap space. But is there any validity to that, or do you think that's just pulled out of someone's bum bum?
No,
Sorry, I have a 3-year-old, all right?
I think that's pulled out of someone's hat, that one, because, I mean, Lou Lamoriello's been a GM in the league since, what, 1985?
Something like that.
Yeah, he's pushing, you know, 35 years as a GM in the league. Do you think he's going to get all wrapped up in this revenge business, and he's going to lose all those picks and give a guy all that money just to stick it back to the team that let him go a couple of years ago and then took their franchise player? I don't think so.
Yeah. Plus, if you look at how things went down with Robin Lehner, like clearly Lou Lamoriello is a guy that looks at things very critically. He does not attach a lot of emotion to decisions. He wants what's best for his hockey team.
Yep.
And if he can't make it work with a player that was there, then he goes another route. So I think the other thing I find hilarious is anytime there's a leak involving the Islanders, not even a leak, when there's rumors about the Islanders, it's like, well, you know, nothing ever gets leaked from Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I tend not to believe anything that happens with the Islanders until it officially physically happens.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think if we do see another offer sheet, it's going to be a repeat of what we saw with the Oilers more than 10 years ago. And it was the same GM doing the offer sheeting, right? So Kevin Lowe did it to Thomas Vanek and Dustin Penner because he was the guy clearly that had no problem with it. So I think if there's another team that's going to attempt an offer sheet, again, it's Montreal.
Well, they better do a better job than they did on the last one.
I still maintain that was a fake offer sheet. People say, well, it was no risk. And I say, exactly, it was no risk and it was no gain because there was no chance of it being friggin' accepted. So it's a fake offer sheet. It's BS. But I do think...
But it's still an offer sheet.
It's still technically an offer sheet. It's a pretend offer sheet, though. It's make-believe. I do think if the Habs go for it again, it'll be Braden Point in Tampa Bay because that's a team...
Well, speculation is that he's already turned them down.
Yeah, apparently. What?
That he's already turned them down.
Well...
They've tried and he's already turned them down.
Breaking news in my own mind.
Yeah, Aho was their second choice.
Okay, well, I guess let's just forget that point.
Never mind.
Let's just shove it back up my bum. So let's move on to the unrestricted free agents.
What kind of 3-year-old are you raising?
A cool one. So we're going to move on to the unrestricted free agents right now. And there still are a few of the bigger names out there. And things have really died down. Of course, as always, very busy on July 1st. But Jake Gardner remains out there. Michael Ferland's still out there. You got Justin Williams still out there. And it does seem like this happens every year with a guy like Gardner. I remember it happened to Chris Russell a few years back. It's always a second-tier guy who's still reasonably valuable but isn't in the tier one. Yep. And he sort of floats out there. And then usually this doesn't end well for the player. The player ends up getting a deal that isn't what he was hoping for.
Right, so because people run out of cap space. Yeah.
Right, so what do you guys think is going on? We'll start with Jake Gardner. Is it a matter of health? Is it a matter of people having a bad taste in their mouth because of his gaffes with the Leafs in the playoffs? Or what do you think is holding teams back from striking a deal with him right now?
See, I think with Gardner, you know what he is, right? You know he's a great puck-moving defenseman who handles the puck a lot, so there's going to be a lot of giveaways. There's going to be the occasional egregious blunder that's going to lead to a big goal. You know that with him going in. What you don't know about Jake Gardner is what you mentioned, Matt, and that is what's the situation with his back? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's keeping teams from really being serious about an offer here. You've got to know that that you're getting a player that can play for all the good things and bad things he brings, can play to that level, to the level that he's played in the last couple of years. And he clearly couldn't do that at the end of last season and in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So I think that's more than anything is what's keeping teams kind of skittish.
Yeah. And once you have that initial wave of July 1st free agents, everybody has to do a bit of a reset. And it's not only the teams, but it's also the players and their agents as well. Now, if you're Jake Gardner, you're saying, okay, well, I'm not going to Vancouver because Tyler Myers went there, and I'm not going to, well, I mean, Erik Karlsson had already signed to San Jose, so it's like he wasn't going to go to San Jose. But you have to look, what are my options? Where do I want to play? Now the pool's not as big because some teams are just out. So I think for a couple of these guys, and, you know, Michael Ferland's another example of a guy banged up physically.
Yeah, you just don't know.
You don't know.
You don't. You can never. He's one of those guys you can never count on. Mm. You can't.
Well, he would come back from an injury and then he would get pulled the same game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this isn't, you know, I mean, it's nothing against Michael Ferland's character, but when you can't count on a guy ever to be in your lineup, there are some guys you know he's going to play 75 games. Yeah. Him, you don't know. He could play all 82. He could play 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that has a big impact on the number. You know, like how much do you pay a guy who might only play 62 games?
Right.
How much do you pay a guy that, you know, is definitely going to give you his all but might not be effective or might be a little bit hampered? And again, going back to the sort of pecking order, you know, if you're a power forward, okay, well, Wayne Simmonds is already off the board. He went to New Jersey. So, you know, Michael Ferland's not going to New Jersey unless they're really bulking up.
Yeah.
You start knocking off different places that have already got that type of player. And it is, you know, we don't have power forwards like we used to. It's hard to find those players, particularly at the prospect level. But that's why you get those weird valuations. You look at the Milan Lucic deal in Edmonton a couple of years ago. But then you have to assess all these factors. And again, from Ferland's perspective, like, does he want to settle for a certain salary? Or does he want to keep pushing and see if there's something else out there? And that's where you get bit of a logjam.
Right, mm-hmm. And I think the problem with guys like Ferland and Gardner, it's not about money per se, it's about term. Because if Gardner was looking for a two-year deal, teams would be lining about the door. Sure, we'll take a chance at 2 years. Same with Michael Ferland. Mm-hmm. But Ferland, for example, that type of game is going to not age his body very well. You look at guys like David Backes and also Wayne Simmons, that they hit 30 and all of a sudden their body's 35.
David Clarkson as well. Perfect example.
Exactly.
Yeah. Perfect example.
If Ferland's out there looking for a five-year deal, it's a pretty risky proposition. And I think Gardner especially, he has the resume and the accomplishments statistically to theoretically ask for a 5 or 6 year deal on paper, but then you factor in the back injury, I'm sure teams are trying to kind of dip their toes in the water, offering him 2 or 3 years, and maybe you get sort of that standoff where his camp is still looking for a longer term deal.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point, Matt, is that this doesn't usually end great for the player. Like, you could see Jay Gardner having to take a 2 year deal now.
Right.
You know,
like Cody Franzen a couple years ago.
Yeah,
that was drawn out, and he ends up taking, I think it was a 1 year deal at the time. And then you also have the other tier of the UFAs that are still out there. It's the Justin Williams tier. And that happens every year where it's the elder statesman who's give or take 40 years old.
Yeah,
and it's more a matter of deciding if he's going to play at all.
Yeah, and when Don Waddell talked about the Sebastian Aho offer sheet, he did say that Williams is kind of in that he's not sure, but he's leaning toward playing. And if he's playing, I mean, I talked to him last year at the end of the season, and he said, if I play, I'm playing here. You know, he's established there, his family's there. I mean, I could see him being one of those guys that goes on the series of 1 year deals until both sides decide that it's not feasible.
Right. Like
anymore,
Joe Thornton is doing the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's sort of look big picture now for the offseason. And this is the point where we kind of assess, okay, which teams have made their big moves, which teams have made questionable moves, but also which teams have made no moves. And I'm really kind of thinking about that. But if you look at the teams that have done little this offseason, which team should be the most nervous about that? Okay, I'll start with this one. I'm going to table the Winnipeg Jets because you lose Ben Chiarot and Jacob Trouba from your blue line. Tyler Myers from your defense corps. Kevin Hayes
is
your
lot.
Second line center.
That's doing
They've
a lot.
Lost, right? They're bleeding.
That's doing
yeah.
a lot.
They're bleeding a lot.
That's half a defense
yeah.
corps.
They're bleeding hockey players. And this is a team that had monster expectations going into last year. We did not help by predicting them to win the Stanley Cup, of course. And the Central Division is so competitive.
Yep.
And it's one thing to go, even going status quo in the Central is considered risky, in my opinion. But
right.
to do the opposite and just lose guys, I'm worried about Winnipeg. It puts a lot of pressure, I think, on Jack Roslovic to play center and play center well, because the Jets otherwise are going to have to do that center rental again, like with Stastny and Hayes, which cost them a first-round pick both times. Can't keep doing that. And even guys like Sammy Niku, this young generation, I always say that for your young guys, you want them to earn their way into the lineup, not get in by default.
Right.
If they earn their way, then they deserve it, and there's less pressure in that way. But with Roslovic, you could end up having what happened to Casey Mittelstadt in Buffalo, where he was sort of just given a job by default of number two center.
Yeah.
Roslovic maybe the number three,
Yamamoto
and not necessarily
Edmonton,
ready.
Not being able to prove that you can do it. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that the Jets are my pick for the team that I'm most worried about right now, and it's not like there's that much out there that they can add to completely change their fortune. I guess Jake Gardner Gardner would be a good fit for Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But even if they add him, I still don't think that's enough to declare their offseason a win.
Right.
Yeah, for me, I look at Detroit, and I'm a little nervous. You know, they made a couple of minor moves. Valtteri Filppula comes back. Patrick Nemeth comes out of the defense corps. But this is a team that we know they're rebuilding. They have the shiny new GM in Steve Yzerman. But I don't think they've done enough, and I don't think there was much there to begin with. And it's just a little tricky where, you know, you've got some young guys that you do want them to earn spots. Philip Zadina, you know, you want to see more Michael Rasmussen in the future, and that's all good. They have some good young players, but I worry that they're going to get swamped, particularly in that division that's pretty top heavy, where they're facing Tampa, Toronto, Boston. You know, Montreal and Florida are going to be pretty competitive this season as well. I just worry that if they get into that losing track, it's not going to be good for the rebuild, especially because they have those unmovable veteran contracts that kind of gum up the works, where you can only bring up so many players because you've got so many veteran slots already taken up. They didn't do much in net. I mean, Calvin Pickard comes in, but I just feel like I'm not seeing a lot of forward progress. And at least with Ottawa, we're going to see a lot of youngsters take on big responsibility. And I think at least with the Senators, they're going to be fun and they're going to get the reps they need. You know, you're going to see Eric Brandstrom get a shot. You're going to see Logan Brown get a shot. Thomas Chabot is obviously going to continue being the workhorse on the back end that he has been the past couple of years. You're going to see loads of Brady Tkachuk. I think that's all good for Ottawa. I don't see the same opportunities in Detroit.
Yeah, and I think the Yzerman situation is exactly why they haven't done that. I mean, he's bought himself a couple of years here, right?
Yeah.
So rather than rush in and start making some moves, maybe he takes a year to kind of figure out where the organization's at, where they're going, who they like, who they don't like, what they're going to do, and then they start making moves. So I think that's sort of part of the whole plan.
And I'll make a prediction. Next year, first overall pick, Alex Lafreniere. To Detroit.
All right.
There you go.
Okay. The team I would be worried about is Calgary. Basically swapped goalies, which is cool. Swapping goalies with Edmonton, not so cool. And that's pretty much all they've done, right?
Yeah, it's been quiet.
Yeah,
it's been quiet.
And for a team that bowed out meekly in the first round in five games after winning game one and doesn't do anything to upgrade its lineup or improve its goaltending. I mean, David Rittich will go to arbitration and there will be an award, or he'll settle. So he'll be there. He'll be under contract. But I don't know. I mean, I think that you might want to look at upgrading, and they haven't done that.
Right. I think Calgary might be a candidate for Michael Fernland, actually. And I like the word you use there, Ken, meek, because they were meek in the first round when the refs put the whistles away. The game got a lot more physical and Calgary didn't have that pushback. And Michael Fernland, if he brings one thing, it's pushback. And he's obviously been a fit there before.
Yep.
I think they would be an ideal candidate. Again, it's just a matter of deciding what's fair value for him. So we're going to do a little bit of fantasy talk now. And one question I get asked a lot after the first wave of free agency is, which guys got the biggest boost from what's happened in the offseason so far? So I'm going to throw out a few names for you. The first one is pretty obvious. It's Nazem Kadri. And it's clear that Colorado has brought him in to be a number two center. And Kadri, while he showed that he can be a shutdown guy, from an offensive and fantasy perspective, it did hurt him when Tavares came in. And people knew that was going to happen. And before John Tavares came to Toronto, Kadri had two 30-plus goal seasons in a row.
Yeah.
He does have a fair amount of offensive talent. He's got good power play acumen as well. So I think Colorado is going to find a way to deploy him, and maybe they find a way to create a stacked first unit where you find a spot for him, even though that would be four forwards. I could see it happening. But either way, I think it's pretty much guaranteed that Kadri gets his old role back, and he'll be a value play, depending on the depth of your league, but he could be a good third center for your fantasy team, second-line center in real life. That's guy number one. Guy number two, it's a weird one, Semyon Varlamov. And it feels like, well, he's going to be splitting time on the Islanders with Thomas Greiss. But people forget, you think at the perception of Semyon Varlamov's relative value right now, it's not overly high, but it's much higher than Robin Lehner's and Thomas Greiss was a year ago before they started working with Mitch Korn, who completely transformed both goaltenders. And to me, the fact that both goalies were so good, not just one of them, it's the real testament to how good of a guru Mitch Korn is. And I think he will have that effect on Semyon Varlamov as well. So, yes, he's going to be splitting with Thomas Greiss, but I think you'll get a season maybe similar to Robin Lehner's last year, where you might get 45 games out of Varlamov, 40 games, whatever it is, but the rate stats are probably going to be really good. That's guy number two. Number three, Alex Galchenyuk. This is kind of a weird one because if you look at the trade as a whole, yes, of course, I think we all agree that Arizona won that trade, getting Phil Kessel, the better player. But if we're just looking at Galchenyuk from a straight fantasy value perspective, I think he gains a lot by going to Pittsburgh. He has scored 30 goals in the past, and there's an excellent chance that if Pittsburgh uses him on the wing, he's going to have the best center he's ever had in his life by a mile. Mm-hmm. Whether he gets a shot with Crosby, whether he gets a shot with Evgeny Malkin, I think Malkin is more likely to be the one. Because, Galchenyuk, you can play either wing, but more commonly he'd be playing the left side.
Yep.
And Gensel often will play that with Crosby. So I think you're going to see Galchenyuk with Malkin, if I'm making a prediction now. And that's going to give Galchenyuk a chance for the best offensive numbers of his career, even if he's no Phil Kessel.
Right on. So Future Watch, we're going to go with a similar theme. You know, guys that may be helped by some of these offseason moves. And the first one, it's obvious to me, is Cale Makar with the Colorado Avalanche. You know, the Avs made the big trade for Nazem Kadri, giving up Tyson Barry. So you lose a great puck-moving defenseman in Barry, but you have Cale Makar, who already showed in the playoffs that he is NHL-ready. I think he'll be a fantastic full-time rookie in the NHL and definitely a Calder Trophy candidate. Similarly, in Nashville, Dante Fabbro, a player who had a very nice college career with Boston University and, you know, already made his pro debut late last season. P.K. Subban goes to New Jersey. Not saying that Fabbro is going to replace P.K. Subban, but at least there's a roster spot that you can pencil him in for full-time and say, okay, Dante Fabbro's going to get some decent minutes now as everybody else on Nashville fills in those PK minutes. And, you know, Fabbro is a two-way guy. He can put up some points. I don't know if necessarily he's going to be a Calder candidate because it tends to be a very flashy category, but I think he's going to be a solid contributor to the Predators, and this is a first-round draft pick that they've been patient with, obviously, because he went NCAA, but I think it's going to pay off sooner than later. Finally, going to France for this one, Alexandre Tessier. Yes. With the Columbus Blue Jackets, well-documented, they lost a couple of forwards of note this summer. And again, Tessier is not the heir apparent to Artemi Panarin or Matt Duchene, but he has some skill. You know, he's got some sandpaper to his game.
Yeah, big time. Big time.
Yeah, yep. And, you know, he's already played some pro hockey, played in Finland, then he played in the AHL, then he played in the NHL for Columbus at the end of last year, got into some playoff games, did not look out of place. Nope. I think this is the type of player that John Tortorella probably really likes. You get the maximum effort. You get a guy that's going to, you know, play that system and, you know, be hard on pucks. And again, you know, I don't think he's necessarily going to be a Calder Trophy candidate because he's probably not going to get you a lot of points, but I think he can be valuable, and I think he's one to watch in the Columbus system because, I mean, frankly, he's passed a couple of other forwards on the depth chart.
Kenneth, you are the lord of hot takery, so what do you taketh for us today?
Well, you know, we talked off the top here about offer sheets, right? And whether or not Mitch Marner was going to get one, is Patrick Laine going to get one, is, you know, Sebastian Aho, you can't call him Aho. My Finnish friend Sammy Hoffman loses his stuff when you say Aho. Sebastian Aho.
Well, he loses stuff.
He got an offer sheet. Why is nobody even mentioning Matthew Tkachuk here? Mm. A guy with 35 goals, 34 goals, 70-something points, lots of grit, lots of sandpaper. A guy that, although, you know, I mean, he had a lot of company. He was one of those quiet guys in the playoffs in the first round, and that's not what you would expect from him. But, I mean, I'll give him a pass because he's a young guy and the whole team was like that. But you know, I mean, if I'm thinking of offer sheeting someone, this is a guy that I would seriously consider offer sheeting. I mean, Calgary has $9 million in cap space, and they're definitely going to sign Sam Bennett and David Rittich because both of them filed for arbitration. Therefore, both of them are going to be guaranteed one way or the other to have a contract that's probably a fair contract, and they'll be playing next year. So that's what? Between those two guys, you're looking at what? Maybe five
yeah,
million?
Yeah,
that doesn't leave
easily
a lot. You could really put them in a jam by offering a big-time offer sheet to Matthew Tkachuk, a guy who, my goodness, I mean,
he does it all.
Yeah, and can't you see his career going this way? Yeah.
And for those just listening, not watching, Ken did the sort of ascending ladder.
Oh yeah,
sort of hand motion.
Yeah.
But I think you're really onto something there. And you know, even though I'm still sort of an offer sheet denier, I do admit that the best candidates for offer sheets come when there's a discrepancy between the attacking team's valuation of the player and the existing team. And Matthew Tkachuk is a guy that we know dating back to his time with the London Knights. He's got a very high offensive ceiling, and he might not have even reached it yet. And there's a perception that he's this all around around guy who's also gritty. And because of that, like, the Flames might think this guy's going to top out at 80 points, but there might be a team out there and says, no, this is a 95-point player. We're gonna offer sheet him for $10.5 million.
His skill level is hugely underrated, in my opinion. I mean, and for that reason, what you talked about, everybody talks about the grit and the determination and the competitiveness and the dirty play and all those, and the Drew Doughty war and everything like that. But what people don't realize is how, you know, what kind of mitts this guy has.
He might be Brad Marchand. Like, Brad Marchand is a 100-point player, and you never know. Yep. So I think if there's a scenario where Calgary's vulnerable, it's going to be if a team doesn't, you know what, yes, we think that Calgary's going to try and sign him for, let's say, a $9 million AAV. Well, let's go an extra $1.5 million to see if that steals him away. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's go to some mailbag questions now. The first one is from Eric Richman. Oh, great name. Sounds like a villain in something, like some comic or I don't know. I don't know. Archie comic. I suck. And Eric says,
I need
in my opinion, Ken's borrowing my pen. In my opinion, the Rangers had an amazing offseason. I agree. Can you recall the best offseason for a team in the history of the league? Pretty epic question.
There,
and like, that's the type of question befitting Eric Richman. He's like,
yes.
Perform for me, boys.
Yes.
So
make it happen.
You kick it off, Ryan.
I don't know if this is too tongue-in-cheek, but in the summer of 1988, the Los Angeles Kings made a trade for a man named Wayne Gretzky. And without understating things, kind of changed that entire franchise. Kind of changed the entire sport of hockey as it would be, where all of a sudden, you know, hockey was something that was a big deal in California. We've seen the ripple effect at the grassroots level. But also, you know, the Los Angeles Kings became a really legitimate force. I mean, Gretzky took them, you know, to a Stanley Cup final in 93. And, you know, they didn't win, but they came close. And from there, you know, like, it wasn't a straight line to the Stanley Cup champion teams, but I think it went a long way of legitimizing that franchise and really getting things solidified. And in the, and again, in the short term, it turned the Los Angeles Kings into a Stanley Cup contender, which before that, they had not had very much success in the playoffs.
Good pick. And you think about all the just Sun Belt expansion, and even like a player like Austin Matthews might be playing a different sport than Wayne Gretzky, right? If you think of the trickle-down effect, and Austin Matthews growing up in Arizona and the Coyotes coming down probably is a trickle-down effect from the Kings, and you go on and on, and maybe Austin Matthews would be playing whatever, baseball or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very interesting pick. I'm going to go with the Colorado Avalanche 1995. Okay, first, they're the most successful relocation in NHL history. They moved that offseason out of Quebec, and that turns out to be their Stanley Cup winning year. But I love the boldness. I believe Pierre Lacroix was their GM at the time.
He was.
And the moves that were made, trading Wendell Clark, who was still pretty much close to in his prime at the time, to get Claude Lemieux, bringing in a guy who had that just playoff clutch pedigree. He had just won a Conn Smythe trophy, bringing in a Conn Smythe winner the very next year to your team. And a really bold move was trading Owen Nolan, who was really starting to come into his own. He was the first overall pick a few years before when Colorado was still the Nordiques, and deciding, you know what, no, we need to make a bold move where we know we have a contending team, but we need to solidify our defense. And right before the season starts, the Wendell Clark move was done a few days before the season starts, but this is cheating a little bit. It was a few weeks into the season, so it's not quite an off-season move, but they did make the move sending Owen Nolan for Sandis Ozelinch. So if you look at the relocation and the bold moves to bring in Claude Lemieux, and a few weeks later, Sandis Ozelinch, I love that offseason for Colorado. It resulted in a Stanley Cup.
And a couple of months later. They get a pretty decent goalie.
Not bad.
And then they go on to win the Stanley Cup.
And they get a rabbit's foot, a human rabbit's foot, known as Mike Keane. Between Mike Keane and Claude Lemieux, like two of the ultimate rabbit's foot that win, they win everywhere they go. Kenny, your turn.
My team is the 2006 Boston Bruins, and it's interesting that, you know, what's the guy's name here? Grandpa's got to lift up his glasses here.
Eric
Richman talks about the New York Rangers, who are led by Jeff Gorton, and the 2006 Boston Bruins. Gorton had a huge hand in building that team, because that summer he traded for Tuukka Rask's rights from the Toronto Maple Leafs, traded Andrew Raycroft in one of the one of the most lopsided deals of this generation. Maybe it might even be in there all time. So there's that. Then he goes to the draft and he drafts in the first round Phil Kessel, in the second round Brad Marchand, and in the third round Milan Lucic.
Woo!
So he does okay there. Then he hands the baton off to Peter Chiarelli, who goes out and signs Zdeno Chara.
Wow. Boom.
So there you go. There's your blueprint for a team. You know, I mean, part of that, a lot of that, you know, three-fifths of that is still a huge part of this team that is, you know, a contending team that made it to the Stanley Cup final.
Absolutely. If our microphones weren't so expensive, I'd say drop that mic, because that might be the winning answer right there.
No, I'm just going to throw it.
Steven, our producer, is giving a major thumbs up, mouthing, no. Next question is from another doozy of a name, non-alcoholic beer leaguer. Asks, any first rounders you think will make an immediate impact for their team next season beside the top two? So other than Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko, Ryan, being Mr. Draft, will give this one to you to start.
Yeah, this almost feels like cheating because I'm going to go with the numbers 3 and 4 picks, Kirby Dach with Chicago and Bowen Byram with Colorado. I don't think either of them is a lock to necessarily even make the team, but because of how many college committed players we had at the top end, I don't think we're going to see a lot of wiggle room there. I don't think we're going to get a lot of surprises. I suppose Moritz Seider with Detroit could be another big surprise, because it's not like Detroit is loaded.
Is he even going to play, though? Is he going to play in Detroit?
Who knows, right? Like, I mean, it's going to come down to camp and how he does there. But he has the size, and he does have pro experience. That would be a long shot for me. Yeah. It always feels like there's one player a year, at least, that surprises and sticks. And every year it's like, I don't know about this year. But, you know, we know Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko are going to be there. Kirby Dach, you know, because he has the size and quite a bit of WHL experience, I could see him making the Blackhawks and not looking out of place. And with Byram, because of his raw talents on the back end, because he was so successful at the end of the year with the WHL's Vancouver Giants, I could see him playing some games with Colorado, maybe even sticking. And for all these kids, it's always their goal to go straight to the draft, so you never have to question the motivation. But those would be the two players I could see doing it. But I do think it's probably just going to be Hughes and Kakko ultimately.
Okay, I'm going all in. I'm doubling down. I'm going all in on this guy.
I know where this
is going. I'm pushing all my chips into the middle of the table here, okay? Cole Caulfield. Cole Caulfield. I'm still not convinced. Until he actually shows up at Madison, Wisconsin, and starts going to class and playing hockey for that team, I'm not 100% convinced he's going to be playing there next year. And if he's not playing there next year, that means he goes to training camp and he has a shot to make the team, and if he makes the team, he has a shot to play. And I'm not giving up on that one yet.
I like it.
I love that you're all in on that.
Yeah,
I'm all in. Like, I'm all in.
Just
I'm
like the Habs.
Just like all my chips are going right in the middle on Cole Caulfield. It's a high risk, high reward.
There you go.
I would have had an answer I was excited about, but I'm a thumb injury away from having the answer that I want.
True.
I agree with Ryan. Actually, I think this is going to be a draft class where we're going to see just the two. It just feels like, especially because, you know, Byram at the top and Colorado, like, they have a lot of other good young defensemen. There's no reason to really rush him right now. But Dylan Cousins, to me, had a great opportunity in Buffalo because they're so desperate for help up the middle, and he's got great size, and he's got a body that might have been, like, compared to most of the kids, NHL ready, but then the thumb. Last time I checked, I don't know yet what the full diagnosis of the thumb is, how long it's going to keep him out. Hopefully it doesn't cost him camp. But if I were to pick a sleeper to make a run and surprise because of his body, I would have picked Dylan Cousins.
Yeah.
Next question is from Ronan Muldoon. Wow, the names are just home runs today.
Indeed.
Ronan Muldoon
asks, who will fall out of the playoffs next season or that will be a surprise. That will be a surprise is, for being honest with Ronan's language. But, you know, we'll let it slide, Ronan.
Sick.
That will be a surprise is. Yeah. So who's your team? Let's hear it. Who's your team that is going to slip out, if anybody?
I'm going to go straight to the top and say St. Louis.
Oh, my God.
That would be surprising.
Spit take.
Let's admit it.
Spit take.
Let's admit. That would be surprising. But there's also...
Not unprecedented.
And here's the thing. The Blues play in a super tough division. you know, the Central, you know, we were doing some rankings in the office earlier today for the yearbook, and it's just really hard to place teams in the Central. I guess if you look at Minnesota and Chicago, you say, all right, well, they're probably not in the mix. But then otherwise, like Nashville, Dallas, Winnipeg, you know, there's a lot that can happen there. And, oh, Colorado as well. So, like, for St. Louis, yes, they're the Stanley Cup champions. Yes, they're a pretty solid two-way team overall. But what happens if Jordan Binnington's magic runs out? What happens if they get into some injury problems? What happens simply if they just don't get enough points in the Central? I mean, we kind of assume that the Pacific's only going to have three teams because the Pacific looks really weak this year.
Oh, yeah.
However, I mean, if there's a fourth team there that gets enough points, then all of a sudden, you know, like St. Louis is going to be in some trouble.
So it's up to Arizona to get off their keisters.
That's right.
Here. The boom boom.
The boom boom.
And start making a race of this.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, I could totally see that happening. If Arizona's playing, you know, more weaker Pacific teams and St. Louis has to run that Central gauntlet, not saying it's fair, but I could see St. Louis missing the playoffs by like 1 point, and it would not be surprising.
I think that's what they missed by the year before, wasn't it? Or close to that?
It was close, yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to go with the New York Islanders because, as you've pointed out many times, Matt, and I defer to you on all things analytics because you're the guy. A lot of the success that the New York Islanders had, you could argue, was predicated on their goaltending rather than a Barry Trotz defensive system, which I think they think anybody can play behind, because I'm not sure in what world Semyon Varlamov is an upgrade on Robin Lehner if you go by last season. Right. I don't know what world a 4x5 for Semyon Varlamov is an upgrade. I don't get it. Anyways, so I think they've downgraded a little bit in that position, and you never know. I mean, if the analytics are right and it regresses to the mean, is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah,
you might be looking at a Colorado situation from a couple of years ago.
From 2013-14, right. Where Varlamov, of all people, was the one who carried them.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Full circle. Okay, good pick. I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I've been saying this for a while now that they're following the path of the Chicago Blackhawks from a few years before, and the Blackhawks were steadily declining, and then they got swept in the first round, and then they were out of the playoffs the next year. Pittsburgh, declining, swept in the first round this year. I think that might culminate in out of the playoffs this year. We look at that defense score. It has not been improved, and actually they got rid of Olli Mato, so they lost a body from it.
Yeah.
And yes, I understand the reasoning behind the Phil Kessel trade, bringing in Galchenyuk and getting Pierre-Olivier Joseph. I think it actually was a smart move overall for the franchise, because I said,
Pittsburgh,
just like Arizona did, they're finding some reclamation projects like Dylan Strome, in this case, Alex Galchenyuk. They're trying to find value out of guys that couldn't quite tap into their potential. So I like it long term, getting younger. But Colorado or Chicago did that last year, and they also missed the playoffs. And I don't think anyone would disagree that going from Kessel to Galchenyuk just this coming season is going to be a downgrade.
Yep.
Because Kessel, even if he doesn't get along with Mike Sullivan, still being a great player for the Penguins, big reason behind their two Stanley Cups in 16 and 17. So to me, this Penguins team is undoubtedly worse on paper. Their biggest addition is the massive overpay for Brandon Tanev, and the Metro is just it's churning with change right now. You've got the top two picks in the draft were added to that mixture. Kako and Hughes and Subban's joining the Metro division, and Artemi Panarin is in the Metro now. Jacob Trouba, the Rangers and Devils, and the Flyers have added a new coach as well. There's so many teams making aggressive moves in that division, and the Penguins are not just stagnant, but they're you could argue they're actually getting worse. So I don't know. It's going to be very dependent on Matt Murray being healthy, and of course you do have Crosby and Malkin, but that's not necessarily the only thing you can have to win. You need more players.
Because a team with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane didn't make the playoffs.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, I'm not saying that the Penguins are going to be a last place team, but I think they're going to be a bubble team. So that's my pick. So before we say goodbye this week, everyone, be sure to check out Newsstands. We have the Champions issue, Alex Pietrangelo on the cover, holding that cup with fireworks in the background. And we got stories on the winners from every single league, pro league in the world in that issue. It's a great issue. And also look for our Meet the New Guy issue, which is coming out any day now. Mm-hmm. It's got PK Subban and Artemi Panarin on the cover. So please buy it and read it. Thanks for listening, everybody.